Welcome to the Kitchen Counter Podcast, episode 155, Stay at Home Cooking. Hey everybody, thank you so much for downloading and listening to this episode of the show. I'm Roger, your host, and of course, this is the podcast that's all about home cooking, getting in the kitchen, learning new things, having fun, all that kind of stuff. Well, look, today I have an episode that is kind of going along with the times in which we live. I'm calling it Stay at Home Cooking. And I don't know about all of you, but I've been chit-chatting with my siblings and family quite a bit these days because, let's face it, there's really nothing else to do. We're not out and about. We're not too busy to communicate these days. And I've been chatting with my brother, Randy, who lives in Denver. And some of you will know of Randy because he's been on the podcast before in a couple of other episodes, which I'll put into the show notes for this episode. But we always love to talk about food. We're talking about food all the time. And so we just kind of one day here a week or so ago, we were like, hey, maybe we should just record some of this because this is kind of the epitome of the Kitchen Counter podcast, sitting around the virtual kitchen counter, if you will, via Skype in two different cities in the United States, but nonetheless, and talking about food and how we're getting by and kind of some of the stuff we're making and that sort of a thing. So we came up with this idea to share back and forth a few recipes that you can make relatively easily. Some of these recipes purely from pantry staples that you have. A couple of these recipes might require a little bit more, like maybe venturing out into the wilderness and going to the store to get some protein, for example. But it was a very casual conversation. We hopped on Skype, traded a few recipes. We've recorded it here for posterity, and I want to share it with you because hopefully there might be some inspiration in here for you all as well. Before we jump right over to that, though, of course, just a quick bit of housekeeping here. You can always get a hold of me by sending an email over to feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. I usually do like a smorgasbord episode or a questions episode if I get enough questions queued up. I've been getting a lot of emails lately, so I have a lot more questions and things to comment on from listener feedback. So if I haven't responded to you yet, I've been a little bit busy, but I will definitely tackle your question here in an upcoming episode very soon. So feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com is a great way to get a hold of me with questions or show topic ideas. Of course, the Facebook group is a great place to engage with our growing community of like-minded home cooks. And to find that, you could head over to kitchencounterpodcast.com/group. And asked to come into the Facebook group. It's a private group. There's no spam. There's no weird stuff going on in there. Just a bunch of cool people who like to cook and share photos and ask questions and offer tips and things like that. And I also want to let you know that in the next few days, probably this coming week, the week after I release this particular episode, I will be releasing another episode with a conversation I had with the wonderful Lisa Chernick, who has written a book called Your Starter Kitchen. We had a really fun conversation about outfitting new kitchens or even established home kitchens, some ideas for where to pick up some inexpensive gear. We talked about some things that new home cooks should be on the lookout for as far as what to do, what not to do when setting up a kitchen and cooking and things like that. There's something in there for everybody. It was a wonderful conversation. So definitely keep your eyes open for the next episode when I talk with Lisa Chernick. That was a lot of fun. And last but not least, for this particular episode, if you'd like to get to the show notes, they will be at kitchencounterpodcast.com/155. The dishes that Randy and I talk about aren't really recipe heavy dishes. They're fairly simple and you could almost put them together based on what we say on the podcast. But insofar as there is a recipe or steps to make these things, I will put them in the show notes over at kitchencounterpodcast.com/155. All right, without further ado, why don't you grab a cup of coffee or tea or water or lemonade and sidle on up to the kitchen counter and hang out with Randy and I as we talk about some fun dishes and easy dishes that you can make while you are stuck at home. Hey, Randy, how's it going?
Hey, good, Roger. Good to see you.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for, I know none of us really have any plans or we're really doing anything these days over the weekend. So I'm glad you, could, carve some time out of your very busy schedule to come on the show.
Yeah. I appreciate you having me. It's not like I'm going anywhere. So, we're all sheltering in place. So, yeah.
And you're in Colorado, you're in Denver. I know you've been on the show a couple of times and we've talked about it, but for people who don't know, you're my oldest brother, or I guess I am your youngest brother, however you want to say it. And I'm here in Oregon and you're in Colorado.
Yes, here in Denver, Denver, Colorado, pretty much like I think the rest of the nation. We're pretty much on a stay-at-home order, except to go out occasionally for necessary things like grocery shopping and medical stuff, and otherwise just hang around the house and do what we can to stop the spread of this virus, I guess.
Yep. Yeah, strange days for sure. So anyway, you and I have been chatting a lot, and the idea came up in one of our fairly recent conversations. Maybe we should do an episode on just, you know, food we can put together while we're kind of stuck at home.
Yeah. I thought just food that was pretty simple. Not too many ingredients, you know, might have to go to the store to get the main ingredient or something, but a lot of the items you might just have, on hand at home. And, even though they're very simple recipes, they're quite tasty.
So I think what we'll do is we'll just kind of trade recipes. I think we can do kind of a breakfast, lunch, dinner theme, more or less.
Okay.
And, we're not going to go super deep. Like how to every step and ingredient of every recipe, but we'll talk about them. But what we'll do, Randy, I have some of your stuff, but if you send me all the details, I'll put it in the show notes for this episode. And I think the other thing I should say up front is these aren't really, are they recipes or are they more like, guidelines? You know, I think in all of these recipes, people will be able to tweak however they want. So if we don't publish a perfect step-by-step exact recipe for each, that might be kind of the point. Does that make sense?
Sure.
Of like, here's the idea. Here's what you need to do. Here's the ingredients you can use. But I think a lot of these you can tweak however you see fit.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And I can send you, I do have kind of a recipe for each of these, but they certainly are pretty easy to switch around and do your own thing.
Okay, cool. All right, so we'll do breakfast, lunch, and dinner. We'll trade off here, and yeah, we'll go that route, and we'll see how this rolls. Do you want to start, or you know, you're the guest, so it's totally up to you. I figure we'll start with breakfast and work our way out.
Okay, that sounds good. Well, I can go ahead and start, I guess. We'll see how it goes.
Okay.
Eggs, obviously, part of my breakfast, and the main ingredients, eggs and mushrooms and cheese. I love the combination of eggs and mushrooms. And so I just put together here a little frittata, or you could do an omelet as well. And basically, the ingredients are mushrooms, eggs, and shredded white cheese. So I prefer white cheese like Swiss or Gouda or Monterey Jack or something like that. And sometimes I'll throw a few chopped, a little bit of chopped onion in there, and basically cook it in a skillet, 10-inch skillet, kind of like you would an omelet. And the flavors are terrific.
Yeah, and I suppose you could even use canned mushrooms if you were really in a pinch.
You probably could. I use typically the fresh mushrooms or mushrooms that you buy in the box. Slice them up a little bit. I change it up, do a variety. I'll do shiitake and then I'll do, you know, papadales, whatever, just different mushrooms to kind of alter the flavor. Put a little oil in the pan, saute the mushrooms a little until they've kind of evaporated and they're starting to shrink. And then add the eggs, usually about 6 to 8 eggs that are well beaten. And then I run a spatula around the edges, kind of let the runny parts of the eggs go underneath so it kind of sets. And then once it sets, sprinkle the cheese on top, cover it with a lid, turn it on low or take it off heat and let it sit for 5 or 10 minutes. You could always put it in the oven too. If you had an oven-proof skillet, you could put it in the oven if you don't have a lid for your skillet. And when it kind of sets up and it's not moving anymore, it's absolutely delicious. I usually put hot sauce on mine, sometimes even a little sour cream if you want to go crazy.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you what your frittata method is. I do the same thing. I do it on the stovetop with a lid. I don't put mine in the oven. No, I know a lot of people do. And yeah, that's totally cool.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. It's easy to do. It takes, literally 5-10 minutes and makes a good meal for two or three people.
And I was just thinking, if you didn't want to go, and a frittata is not complicated. An omelet can be tricky depending on how anal you are about your, omelet technique, but you could even just make a scramble and it would be pretty good.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Scramble would be delicious.
Okay, cool. All right. So my breakfast dish, I actually did a Less Cook episode on this general topic in the past, but I tried to pick almost everything that you might have in your pantry and that you could do without fresh ingredients, but this is an exception. You would need preferably an egg for this one as well. But mine is a chickpea shakshuka. And typically, I like to make a shakshuka like in a skillet, make a big serving, several servings at once with a lot of tomato sauce. But a while back, I found this great idea to do them in single servings in ramekins in the microwave. And it's so much simpler, and it's easy and it's quick. And if there's only one or two of you, you don't have to cook up a big batch of shakshuka. But basically, chickpea is one of its primary ingredients. And so what you do is you have a can of chickpeas, basically, and you want about a fourth of a can. So I guess if you had a whole can of chickpeas, you could make four servings of this. Drain those, rinse those, put those in the bottom of a ramekin, put in like a quarter cup of either tomato sauce or marinara sauce, or gosh, you could probably even use salsa or something like that if you wanted to go that route. If you, some red pepper flakes to spice it up, and then of course salt and pepper. So you kind of mix that in the ramekin, and then you just crack an egg on top. You pop that in the microwave, put a paper towel over the top because eggs sometimes have a tendency to pop in the microwave. I don't know if you've ever done an egg in the microwave, but they can do that. And you just microwave it for like a minute to start, and then like 15 or 20 second bursts after that until the eggs are set how you like them, and you're done. You've got this nice little single serving shakshuka. So kind of cool.
Very cool. Yeah, I've done this more just like you have, probably just in the skillet with tomato sauce and that type of thing. And so seeing it in ramekins here and just being able to do it in the microwave, I thought was pretty ingenious. I'll have to give it a shot.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't take credit. I'll try to find the link where I saw that originally and include it. But of course, you need to make sure your ramekin or your whatever you're cooking in is microwave safe, obviously. But yeah, it's, and this is one of those, you can go any direction with the spices you want. I mean, if you want to go more Indian flavor profile, you could probably mix in some curry powder. If you wanted to go Southwestern, you could do chili powder and cumin and, onions. I mean, you could go really whatever direction you want to with this. So pretty versatile.
Absolutely. And you probably, if you wanted to, you probably could bake the ramekins too, right?
Yeah. In fact, that's one of my favorite dishes too, is like a baked egg dish. Just where you do a similar thing. I don't typically do the chickpeas, but it's like a tomato sauce, maybe some sauteed spinach, some sauteed onions, and maybe some Parmesan cheese. But yeah, you just put it in a shallow dish, crack an egg on top, sprinkle a little cheese on it, and throw it in the oven and bake it. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that sounds terrific.
Yeah, you definitely. And of course, you could do this in one big batch in a skillet too. So yeah, chickpea shakshuka. That's my breakfast. Quarantine breakfast idea.
Awesome. And shakshuka is such a cool word to say.
I know. Yeah, isn't it? Like
it is.
Just a cool, it's a cool word. All right, man. What do you got for lunch on your menu?
Okay, for lunch, I kind of went the salad route. So something served kind of at room temperature, although it can be chilled. But I went with a classic Italian white bean and tuna salad. So this is like the easiest salad to make, and it is so delicious. And so what I use, main ingredients are tuna, canned white beans, and red onion, and then some oil and vinegar. So I use, to serve about four people, I use two large cans of tuna, so the 6-ounce cans, or they also come in a pouch. And I take the tuna that's in water, and so drain the tuna well, put it in a large bowl, And then for each 6 ounce serving, I do about 1 15-ounce can of white beans. So navy beans, cannellini beans, northern beans, basically your white bean. Take a small red onion and slice it really thin. And then I usually cut that into fourths so the slices are kind of a little bit smaller, but you don't want to chop them. And then put it all in a bowl together, salt and pepper it a little bit to taste. And then I put olive oil, just sprinkle it over the top, typically maybe 1 to 2 tablespoons of olive oil, and then about the same amount of red wine vinegar, and just toss it up, and you won't believe how flavorful it is. And I can see why it's a classic Italian dish. You put it together. I usually eat at room temperature, but you can chill it, and it is just as good, if not a little better, the next day after it's been in the fridge overnight. But really easy recipe, probably everything you got on hand with the canned tuna, maybe some beans, and really delicious. The other thing you can do, if you want to add some twist to it, like you could make it a little more Mediterranean, add some Kalamata olives and some feta cheese, that's delicious. You can kind of play with it however you want. And it's really, really easy, really good.
Yeah, and you know what I love about this recipe is it uses canned tuna. And I'm not that creative when it comes to something like canned tuna. Cause I just, frankly, I would make like a tuna salad sandwich and I'd be happy with that. But I think a lot of people probably have a lot of canned tuna on hand in their pantry and whatnot. So this is a really cool way, you know, to put that to use where you're not just making a salad or a sandwich rather. Yeah. So I think it's a cool recipe.
Yeah, really cool. And really for me, it's the olive oil and vinegar that really make it. So depending on how you like it, if you like it a little more oily, I tend to kind of like a little more of a vinegary taste. So I might add a little bit more vinegar. And then most people, I think, at least it seems like buy tuna, canned tuna in water, but you can buy canned tuna in oil or olive oil. If that's what you have on hand, just skip the olive oil part and just add the red wine vinegar to get that proper balance of oil and vinegar, and you'll be good to go. I guarantee you'll make it often.
That's a very good tip, using just the canned tuna and oil. If that's what you have, and you can skip using extra oil. Good call.
Yep, exactly.
All right. Shall I do my lunch item?
Do your lunch.
Okay. So this is actually one that, this will be funny. This was in a cookbook that we got a few years ago for Alex when he was young. We were trying to find foods that kids would like. And it was, but, you know, not just roll ups and the basic stuff. It was fairly adventurous. And there was this recipe in there that we made for him that I actually ended up, I think, liking just as a meal. It's really good and it's very simple. And it's essentially a lentil chili. Again, very easy, dried lentils, like a cup and a half of dried lentils, a big can of diced tomatoes, some water or broth, some corns, like a drained can of corn, and then some spices. If you're making it like a chili, some chili powder, some cumin, basically just mix it up in a crock pot and put it on low for about 4 hours and you're good to go. It's ridiculously nutritious. Lentils are very good for you. And unlike beans, dried beans that take forever, you know, depending on how you're making them, to soak and to soften and to cook, you don't have to pre-soak lentils, right? So you can get the dried lentils, you throw them in the crock pot and they're ready in a couple hours. You can do it on the stovetop too in less time. But if you get up in the morning and throw this in the crock pot, it would be ready for lunchtime, or make it the night before. It's fantastic the next day. And again, this is something that you can change up the spices however you see fit. And if you're somebody who has to have meat in their chili, you could certainly throw meat into this too, and it would be delicious. So I think lentils are underrated. I don't think a lot of people, at least in the United States, cook with lentils all that much. But yeah, you should definitely have a bag or two in your pantry, because you can do all sorts of stuff with lentils, but this is really easy.
Yeah, that's a terrific recipe. I am one of those people that never really cooks with lentils, and I never have lentils in my pantry. But I often see recipes which include lentils, and I usually skip those recipes. This is pretty good. Kind of adventurous, and I would definitely give it a try. And I like the fact that you could add, you know, onions and garlics or jalapeno.
Yeah. Oh, that's right.
Just anything you would want to throw in there to change it up a little, add some spice, you know, whatever kind of suits your taste buds.
Yeah, I'm glad you reminded me of that, because I think ideally what you would do is onion, garlic, you know, diced up and cooked down, sweated down before you added all the other ingredients, ideally. But, you know, if you're in a situation where you don't have access to fresh onion or garlic, you could certainly use I'll tell you, one of my favorite hacks, if in a pinch I don't have an onion but I need to add some onion flavor to something, are the dried onion flakes. Not necessarily the powder, which is okay, but the flakes, which are basically dehydrated onion, right? You can throw those into things. It's not the same, but it will give you a little bit of that onion flavor base in a pinch. So you can throw stuff like that in here too, for sure.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, great recipe.
All right, Randy, that brings us to dinner time. So what are you cooking up for dinner?
Well, I went with a dish that's actually might even be a little bit elegant, actually, but it's quite easy. This is a salmon recipe, so we'll have to get you know, your fresh salmon, or you can use frozen or whatever from the grocery store. It's probably not something you just have hanging around in the fridge. But basically, this is a salmon with mustard and dill. Kind of off the top of it, that probably sounds like a little bit of an interesting combination, because the main ingredient is a salmon fillet, and then it's Dijon mustard and dill weed. And that's about it, and a little bit of lime juice. So what you basically do is you get a salmon fillet. I would usually buy, you know, depends on if you're cooking for two people, three people, four people, or even if you have multiple people coming over, maybe a couple of couples coming over for dinner. This is really a pretty impressive dish, because you buy a big fillet of salmon, might be a pound or a 2 pound fillet. Lightly grease a baking dish and put the salmon in there, skin side down. And then take Dijon mustard, and I brush Dijon mustard over the entire salmon with a basting brush, basically, and fairly generous. You want the yellow of the mustard to cover the entire salmon, so you can't really even see the salmon color. And then drizzle some fresh lime juice over the whole thing, and then sprinkle it with either some fresh chopped dill, or you can use dried dill as well, and then season it with a little bit of pepper. Put it in the oven at 400 degrees for about 10 to 12 minutes. I usually go about 10 to 12 minutes per inch thickness of the salmon, so this maybe it'd be even 15. But basically, when it, you know, flakes easily, don't want to overcook it too much, but when it flakes easily with a fork, then I pull it out of the oven, let it sit for a couple of minutes, and then usually transfer it to a serving plate. So especially if you got a few people that you're entertaining for that evening, you move this to, I'll put like a bunch of lettuce, some different types of lettuces on a nice serving tray, and move this fillet over, and it looks very impressive. People can serve themselves. But the combination, Dijon mustard, when it heats like this, kind of mellows out the flavor. You don't really taste a mustardy flavor. There's a little horseradish type of flavor. And it really goes great with the salmon. And anytime I've served it, people are like, wow, I never would have thought that combination would go that good together. But it's really delicious.
That's I've never tried that. I would definitely try that. And in fact, I have a couple of sockeye salmon fillets in the freezer, small pieces.
Yes.
So I might have to maybe this week thaw those out and give this a roll. Because you could make smaller portions. You wouldn't obviously need to have to do a whole fillet of salmon. You could do portions or whatever you can get your hands on.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of the grocery stores now have this salmon portioned out into 6 ounce, you know, little fillets or whatever. Yeah, if you're making it for one person or two people, you know, yeah, just as easy to do. Just baste it with Dijon, sprinkle some lime juice, throw it in the oven. It's really good.
That is very cool. And I do want to plug frozen fish, because I think I don't know what the salmon situation or the fresh fish situation is going to be in the coming weeks or months. But I always try to have a couple, you know, a package of some sort of a frozen fish in the freezer, because you know, this whole idea of frozen sometimes has a stigma. And in reality, frozen fish is often better quality than the quote unquote fresh fish you can get in the supermarket because, and oftentimes it's frozen right on the boat. It's like fresh frozen. So it's frozen at the peak of its freshness. It's vacuum sealed. So when you throw it in your freezer, it's not going to get freezer burnt. It holds up really well and it thaws just fine. It's a good product. So, I would put in a plug for frozen fish is not something to be afraid of for sure. But fresh fish, of course, if it just came out of the river or the ocean, that's the way to go.
Yeah. But yeah, delicious. I oftentimes have some frozen cod or halibut or something, in the refrigerator as well. And not to go off on a side tangent, but the frozen thing kind of goes along with things like frozen vegetables and frozen fruit. Also almost as good as fresh, sometimes maybe even better than fresh sometimes if it's not in season. So yeah, frozen food sometimes gets a bad rap.
It does. And again, to go down your rabbit hole with you, sometimes when you're looking for, you don't have fresh vegetables particularly available and your recipe calls, you know, like for example, canned peas and frozen peas are two entirely different beasts, right?
Absolutely.
canned peas have been pressure packed in a can. They're kind of mushy. They're basically cooked already. They're not going to hold their shape and their form if that's something you want. Whereas frozen peas are essentially frozen raw peas. You thaw them out and they're perfect little round, firm green peas, right? So it's a different, nothing against canned peas, but it's just a different beast.
Yeah.
With frozen vegetables. So yeah, oftentimes they're the way to go, especially to your point, if you're making, salads and things like that, sometimes just thawed frozen vegetables are the way to go because they do hold up so much nicer.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. I guess that brings me to my dinner. This one is inspired by something mom would make a lot. I don't know if I've ever talked about this on the show, but this is so easy, but it's to me, it might be the ultimate comfort food. And it's just a riff on creamy chicken and rice. And ideally you would have actual chicken, whether it's fresh or frozen that you thaw out. That would be the best case scenario. If you didn't have it, you could certainly use canned chicken. You could get by with that, but this is an ultimate pantry meal too, because I don't even think you need one fresh thing for this per se. It's essentially a cup of uncooked rice. You could do white or brown rice, a can of a condensed cream soup, like cream of chicken soup or cream of mushroom soup or cream of whatever, celery, whatever you've got, potato could even work, I suppose. Chicken and a couple of cups of water. And then you could put some veggies in too if you wanted to. Again, you can riff on this, but essentially, and you season it with salt and pepper, you mix that up. I typically make it in my Dutch oven. I just throw it in the oven for like 350 for like 45 minutes and the rice cooks up and it absorbs all the water and the cream of chicken soup and it's kind of gooey and creamy and the chicken gets cooked through and adds its flavor to it. And it's like stick to your ribs kind of good. You know what I mean? It's so simple. It's ridiculous. You could do it in a slow cooker too and have that ready for dinner time. No problem. But, yeah, that would be my entree. And in fact, I think I'm going to be making that this week. Got some chicken in the freezer and it's easy and good.
Yeah. I made this myself here. We made it about maybe a month ago or so because I was kind of craving this type of dish and I had not had it in years. And it was funny when I saw this recipe because it just reminds me of mom and the dishes she cooked. But I can tell you it's so simple, but you cannot stop eating it.
Oh, guaranteed. Yeah.
You cannot stop eating this. It's just so good.
Yeah. And mom would often make it with pork chops. If you recall, same recipe, everything the same, except instead of chicken, she would put pork chops and she would basically set the pork chops on top and you would put it in like a roasting dish with a lid and pop it in the oven. And that's pretty dang good too. Either way, it's just good, but you're right. I could eat a whole serving of it. No sweat.
Yes. Yeah. Easily a whole serving. I mean, this is, simple, but just delicious. True comfort food right here.
Indeed. Indeed. All right. I guess that gets us through our six recipes. That was easy.
That went fast.
Yeah, that was good. That was fun. Well, hopefully it gives people I mean, whether they make these or not, hopefully it just gives people an idea of different things to do. I just thought it would be fun to get together with you and talk a little food while we're stuck at home. So I think it turned out good. So, and you'll send me the information so I can put some of the information on these in the show notes so you don't have to try to recreate what we said just from the podcast episode itself.
Yeah, definitely. We'll send that to you. And yeah, I appreciate you having me on. I hope everybody is staying safe and healthy and sheltering wherever they're at.
Yep, we'll get through it. Staying together apart, or okay, I'm not sure how the saying goes.
I saw that. Yeah, I saw a billboard or so. Staying together apart. Yeah, yeah. People are being very creative, and it's kind of one of those situations where we're kind of pulling together as a country when we can't be together. It's kind of interesting.
It's definitely the most interesting thing I've ever lived through, I think.
Yeah, I would venture a guess it's probably the most interesting thing any of us have lived through. And unless you lived through the Spanish flu and you're one of the rare people that might be still alive, I don't know.
Yeah, I think those people exist, but yeah.
Yeah, 1918. But other than that, you are right. This is a very, very strange time.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on. And yeah, we'll catch you. Maybe we'll figure out something else to talk about real soon.
Yeah, that sounds good, Roger. Anytime. Always love to participate.
Hey, everybody. I hope you enjoyed that conversation between my brother Randy and I. Again, if you want to get to the show notes for this episode, they are over at kitchencounterpodcast.com/155. And of course, if you're interested in joining the Facebook group, if you haven't already, head over to kitchencounterpodcast.com/group. All right, everybody. Thanks once again for tuning in and listening to the show. Really, really appreciate it. You know, I love all of you very much, and I really appreciate the time that you take to spend with me in your earbuds, if you will. Again, in a few days, I'll have an episode coming out with the great Lisa Chernick about your starter kitchen and some other fun stuff I've got cooking with some other past guests to pass the time and to be a little bit lighter in this these strange days that we're living in right now. All right, everybody. Thank you so much once again. I am Roger with the Kitchen Counter Podcast. And until next time, happy cooking.